Welcome to the Math Ed Podcast. I'm Sam Otten from the University of Missouri. A few episodes back, I gave a recap of some of the sessions at the PMENA Research Conference in Reno, Nevada. I want to return to the PMENA Conference for one more episode so that you can hear from Dr. Robert Q. Berry III, who is now the Dean of the College of Education at the University of Arizona, but he's well known as a leading scholar in math education and a past president of the National Council of Teachers of Mathematics. I was unable to attend his session at PMENA, But Taruni Lamberg and the other conference organizers were able to fit in a rare fourth plenary session at PMENA, albeit a shorter one than the others. But this final plenary session was by Dr. Berry, and it was entitled Preparing Teachers to Engage Students for Equitable Mathematics Education. He has given me permission to share the audio here, but you can also see the presentation on YouTube on Taruni Lamberg's channel, and you can read his written summary in the PMENA 45 proceedings. I'll put links to both of those in the show notes. As a heads up, the audio does cut out at the end, but we're only missing the last few words of the presentation. So let me turn it over to Robert Berry back in Reno.
So I've been tasked with talking about preparing teachers to engage students for equitable mathematics education. That is all interesting because many of you might know I'm a dean of a college, and I haven't taught anything since I've been a dean of a college. So I don't prepare anybody to do anything, right? So there's a little bit of kind of, you know, this, I used to do that, and I hope to do it one day because, you know, my department head is sitting in the crowd, and so hopefully we'll find a way to find myself in a space where I can begin to prepare. I won't say in the near future, but maybe in a future. But as I talk about this, I'm going to borrow from Howard Milner, and I'm going to talk about as they think about their framework around preparing teachers for equitable education. This is at the intersection of, you know, as we think about preparing teachers, their framework is not mathematical centric, but what I like about this framework is I'm going to add the mathematics on top of their framework. So they talk about this notion of content knowledge, which we're all familiar with, particularly in mathematics. They talk about this notion of pedagogical content knowledge, which I think we can frame this as MKT and the intersection of content and pedagogy. But there's this other thing of cultural and racial knowledge. And this is significantly important as we think about those intersections and think about how do all three of these framings intersect in ways that inform us as teacher educators to prepare teachers to go into schools and classrooms and communities to kind of do the work that we hope that they will engage in doing that work. So keep that in mind as I kind of move forward in my talk here. So as we think about preparing teachers for equitable education, borrowing from Howard Milner, they think about this idea of, you know, preparing teachers of mathematics to consider people's practices in African, indigenous, and non-Western perspectives. And when we think about this, I kind of overlay this work, being that I now live in Arizona, and being that this work is foundational to Arizona, the idea of funds of knowledge, I want to acknowledge Marta Seville, who's here. And the idea, you know, when we think about funds of knowledge as it intersect with mathematics, teaching, and learning, it is those kind of cultural experiences, those artifacts, those values, those emotions, their language, the identity that students bring to this space that we call schools and classrooms. And how are those things acknowledged? How do those things show up in this space? And how do teachers use this? And how do we prepare teachers to do that kind of work to support students in their thinking around mathematics? So I want to introduce you to a teacher. I have this story in the proceedings, but I want to talk about this teacher. Her name is Miss Lewis. In the previous work at my previous institution, I engaged in this work called MSCAN. And MSCAN is an observation measure that has what we call four domains. So if you see the yellows, coherence, discourse, task, and representation, those are the domains. And then there are nine dimensions, and within each dimension there are indicators. It's an observation tool or measure that we developed many years ago when I was at the University of Virginia. And I'm still leaning into this work, partly because we did observations of over 3,600 classrooms. And so that data is still data rich. And oftentimes I kind of lean back into it, just kind of look at how can we think about this work and the work of teachers. The reason why I have discourse and the two dimensions that are highlighted beside discourse, which is mathematical discourse community and explanation and justification, that is the thing that I want to focus on as I think about practices and preparing teachers. So I want to focus on this, but I want to talk about Ms. Lewis. But before I talk about Ms. Lewis, let me just kind of unpack mathematical discourse community. Mathematical discourse community is the dimension that's in the domain of discourse, but then you have these indicators, and the two indicators are teacher's role in discourse and the sense of mathematical community through student talk and questions. And so just to kind of shorten this, Ms. Lewis, across these indicators, was in the 5-6 range. And if you look at the 5-6 range, that means she was what we call a high medium or low high, right? If that makes sense, but you know, it made sense to us who engage in this work. So a high, medium, or a low high. But if you look at these indicators in this space, you know, for example, teacher's role in discourse, throughout math discussion in the classroom, students consistently participate. An idea, what does that mean in terms of participation? And we kind of belted this out in thinking about this. Students' ideas and questions and input are frequently solicited. And I'll let you read the rest for yourself. But think about this teacher. She's in the high, medium, low, high. So relative to the overall observations of fourth grade teachers that we did in this study, one can argue that Ms. Lewis is a pretty good teacher, as noted by MScan, because many teachers fell way below the standard. All right? And so when we look at the next one, explanation and justification, again, she was in this high, medium, low, high range across the indicators. And so if you look at these indicators, you know, the idea of the presence of explanation and justification, and then the depth. So is it present? And then we talk about the depth of explanation and justification. So keep that in mind as I kind of unpack the story about Mrs. Lewis. I'm going to just read the story a little bit to you. So Ms. Lewis, a fourth grade teacher, uses Cuisenaire rods to make sure her students understand the concept of unitizing, partitioning, and iterating. In previous grades and lessons, students use Cuisenaire rods to compare fractions, add fractions with like denominators, subtract fractions with like denominators. In this lesson, Ms. Lewis builds on previously learned concepts to introduce adding fractions with unlike denominators. She starts by saying, if brown is the whole, how might we solve 1/2 + 1/4? And so if we look at this, so if brown is the whole, how might we solve this? And so if you look at this, you know, one way of thinking about this is that brown is the whole, you know, if we look at the denominator, 1/2, 1/4, we can partition the whole into 2 equal parts, and we can partition the whole into 4 equal parts, and then we can determine what 1/2 is, we can determine what 1/4 is, and then kind of go from there. So you see the representations as we kind of think about using Cuisenaire rods to do addition of fractions and unlike denominators. And so we can see the result of that, 1/2 + 1/4, and then we actually, you know, when I used to teach math methods, you know, this idea of, now I'm thinking about 1/2 as 2/4 and how might we be able to represent 1/2 as 2/4. And sometimes I would say, okay, a common denominator, common color, to have that language and that discussion around that and what that might mean for students. In this class, there are three black students in this class, but I want to focus on 2 black girls. And the 2 black girls in this class are Alexa and Jasmine. So students worked on the problems individually, then in pairs. Alexa and Jasmine, 2 black girls, paired up to share their work and thinking with one another. Alexa's representation of the problem, and you can see her representation there on the screen. Alexa stated, since brown is a whole, purple is 1/2 because 2 purples make a brown. And red is 1/4 because 4 reds make a brown. Kind of makes sense for a fourth grader, right? And then Jasmine stated, and I want you to consider this, they were talking at the same time. They weren't turn-taking. They were talking at the same time. So Jasmine stated, the purple is the same as 2 reds, so 2 reds are 1/2. That is the same as 2/4. You put the 2 reds, and the answer is 3/4. The discussion between the girls continue, with both working to make sense of the representation and convincing each other why their representation made more sense. Alessa and Jasmine were talking, referencing their representation simultaneously in a dynamic rather than a linear way. Their voices were elevated. So picture this. Their voices were elevated. They expressed themselves nonverbally using hand gestures and their bodies. While making her rounds to the pairs of students, Ms. Lewis said to Alexa and Jasmine, "Ladies, one at a time." There was no acknowledgement of their mathematical representation or the content of what was said. When it was time for whole group discussion, Alexa and Jasmine enthusiastically raised their hands to share but were not acknowledged. After three students shared, Ms. Lewis presented a second task. And here's the second task she presented. So the second task is, if the blue rod is the whole, how might we solve 2/3 plus 2/9? Alexa decided not to engage with the task. Jasmine spent much of the time trying to get Alexa to do the task. Alexa says, "Why should I do it? She ain't gonna call on us anyway." Jasmine responded, "That don't matter. Come on, just do it." After a few moments, Ms. Lewis made her rounds to Alexa and Jasmine and noted that neither had started the second task. Ms. Lewis stated, "I need you ladies to get started and follow directions." Jasmine started representing the task with Cuisenaire rods while Alexa decided not to engage. As I reflected on Alexa and Jasmine's positioning in Ms. Lewis' class, I wondered if the girls' discourse patterns were perceived as not competent, and as a result, Alexa felt marginalized and disconnected. What if Ms. Lewis had led by getting a sense of the girls' mathematics understanding rather than focusing on the way the girls were engaging? If Ms. Lewis had taken this approach, would Alexa continue to engage and stay engaged throughout the lesson? So that's the question I wondered as I was thinking about these two young ladies and observing these two young ladies in their lesson. So as I think about this work, the one thing I want you to think about is Alexa and Jasmine. Think about, you know, the moments and the decision-making moments. Think about Ms. Lewis and how she made those decisions in the moment. Why did she choose to ask the questions that she asked? Think about Alexa and Jasmine's engagement. Why did they choose to engage? Why did they not choose to engage? And what histories come to this, whether about their decisions to engage or not engage? But also consider that by all measures of MSCAN, Ms. Lewis is considered a relatively good teacher as we think about this notion of discourse in the classroom. And also think about Alexa and Jasmine's positioning in the classroom. So as we prepare teachers to engage equitably in mathematics education, I want us to think about, I mentioned discourse already, but I want to raise this notion of how do we prepare teachers around this notion of systemic violence? And how do we think about this notion of discretionary spaces, borrowing from Deborah Ball's work around discretionary spaces in classrooms? And so I want to raise these things up and think about how we think about this thing. When we think about discourse and then this question of discourse and the practices of discourse, and there's widespread agreement about discourse practices in math education. But when we think about the practice of the discourse to the exclusion, cultural understanding and positioning of students, what might that mean? And then I'm thinking about, in Mrs. Lewis, in the vignette with Ms. Lewis, and how she responded to the students to the exclusion, and not focusing on the mathematics, but to the exclusion of the girls. So you can imagine two black girls in classroom speaking with their hands, I speak with my hands, right? So, hey, take a picture of me right now, and people wonder, what the hell is he doing? But the idea of speaking with one's bodies, speaking with one's hands, speaking with one in a nonverbal way, how might that be interpreted? And what resources inform one to speak in the way that they speak? Oftentimes when I use videos in classrooms, sometimes I don't turn the volume on. I ask my students to listen to students' bodies. And what are their bodies telling you?